Hi, it's Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The podcast where we explore the more bizarre ways of getting through your day. This week we have a story by Thunderpuff, who you'll find on Medium.com. And here is, It's St. Patty's Day, Motherfucks, a working title, or How I Used to Love the Nightlife. Years ago, when I was in my 20s and single, I carried around this almost unconscious assumption that, on a few specific days each year, you had to have plans. New Year's, Valentine's, Halloween, and St. Patrick's, otherwise known as the Big Four. These were the holidays that separated the have plans from the have not plans, meaning when the festivities began, you either had some place to be and someone to be there with, or you were a friendless, boring, leprous, nerd hermit. Author's note, having spent somewhere in the neighborhood of 50-plus previous social holidays either alone doing laundry or watching Law and Order with my mother, I'm permitted to use the term friendless, boring, leprous, nerd hermit with impunity. To be absolutely clear, I wasn't the one making up this ridiculous expectation regarding stupid holiday plans. I blame romantic comedies and high school for everything. I merely accepted it blindly and without question, because having something to do on one of the biggest drinking nights of the year, in honor of St. Patrick, was just another way of saying, I seem popular, which really just meant, I don't know what the hell I'm doing with my life, but maybe if I drink enough, it'll come to me. So I exhausted a brief portion of my 20s and early 30s feeling obligated to publicly celebrate the Big Four. I celebrated Halloween by spending a small fortune on makeup, hairspray, and slutty cat costumes. I celebrated Valentine's Day with vodka and emotional detachment. I celebrated New Year's at random house parties that peaked around 9:30 when someone threw up in the living room. Not me. I celebrated St. Patrick's Day by drinking various shades of green liquids in a bar and listening to depression-inspired karaoke. And I did all of this while wearing extremely painful but really cute shoes. While some of those nights out were certainly fun, others I hardly remember, and all the rest were, well, less Studio 54 and more A Night at the Roxbury. Enter the Dragon. The Dragon's Lair pub was the last stop of the night and occupied the center space in a late 70s strip mall done in a fallout shelter facade. To my knowledge, it had no particular reputation, though, if I had to guess, I would say it was mostly known for its video poker and mold. Before arriving at what would be the final destination of my self-respect and dignity, my friends and I, Sharon, Katie, and Lisa, had experienced a rather lackluster St. Patrick's night that involved lots of watered-down drinks consumed while standing around and screaming at close range, i.e., clubbing. We'd spent hours getting ready to head downtown in search of excitement, dancing, cocktails, and possible love connections, only to suffer massive financial loss and general disappointment. Over the course of several hours, we'd paid three ridiculous cover charges and attempted to squeeze our way onto dance floors filled with something far more complex and disturbing than a human centipede. Every attempt to find a 12-inch square of personal breathing space, let alone dance space, was quickly dashed as the human octoborg swept in and mashed, rubbed, and pinched us until we grew disgusted by other people's sweat and ran to the exits. After midnight, each about $75 lighter, we called a cab and headed back to the land of I've Given Up, better known as the suburbs. Adorned with shiny clover garland, the door to the Dragon's Lair was propped open, and a large man wearing a Thin Lizzy t-shirt sat on a stool taking money and stamping hands. At first, I was surprised that the Dragon's Lair felt the need to use a re-entry stamp until I realized the tattoo parlor next door was basically feeding off the human remains who occasionally, after drowning in Jägermeister, wanted a permanent scar of the evening's regrets before returning for a nightcap. I was equally surprised to be charged a cover until it was revealed that, in tribute to St. Pat, it was $1 shots and karaoke night, otherwise known as Every Fucking Saturday. Okay, before we go any further in the story, I feel the need to explain my state of mind. Though my memory is foggy now, I was probably under the less than spectacular influence of 4 Long Island iced teas at this point. Being a true lightweight, anything over 3 meant all practical decision-making skills had left for the evening, and I was running on the auxiliary power of my somewhat more inebriated friends. We were now at the moment in the evening in which every half-assed idea was a good idea. For instance, "Hey, that bar over there, in that nearly abandoned strip mall, the one by that pawn shop with the guy peeing on the wall, we should go there." "Oh, that's such a good idea." Drinking tip number 1. If the bar you're going to ends up being in a strip mall that looks like a burned-out Thunderdome, just stop. No one, I repeat, no one has met their soulmate in a bar that serves complimentary pork rinds and lung cancer. Having just left the crushing dance floors of the city's night scene, and because I was wearing stupid pointy-toed heels, I was relieved to see an available table inside the Dragon's Lair. As we sat down, the smells of decades-old cigarette smoke and dark liquors arose from the torn vinyl booth like an air freshener. The lighting was somewhere between dentist's office and airport runway. A few dozen patrons clung to the bar and scattered around tables as a small group of bad dancers swayed non-rhythmically to Angie screeching Total Eclipse of the Heart. I was growing reflective as the recognition of an evening gone wrong began to seep in. "Guys," I shouted over a monotone version of Careless Whisper, "this place is sort of depressing." "Somebody needs a drink," Sharon announced and flagged down a server carrying a tray loaded with tiny plastic cups. $1 shots," the waitress said flatly. My friends each grabbed 2 and, as if synchronized, tossed them back before crumpling the empty containers. Drinking tip number 2. Okay, here's the deal. Shots serve one purpose and one purpose only: to make you really drunk really fast, or in some cases, feel like you just ate bad clams blindfolded on a tilt-a-whirl really fast. Sharon shoved one of the medication-sized cups in front of me and said, "Your turn." I wasn't sure what we were drinking, but I wanted to be a good sport, so I tipped my head back and expected the liquid to wash down my throat. Instead, it jiggled, then plopped as one solid mass on my tongue, where it sat for a few seconds as my sluggish reflexes realized something was amiss. Not wanting to gross anyone out by spitting it back from whence it came, I finally gulped it down. The taste of lime slurry with a hint of cactus coated my tongue. Apparently, the Dragon's Lair celebrated St. Patrick's in 2 ways. First, by taping paper shamrocks to the walls, and second, by mixing lime jello with cheap tequila. Because St. Patrick didn't chase the snakes, he chased the worm. Drinking tip number 3. Never consume unknown semi-solids from tiny plastic cups, especially if they only cost $1. Another author's note. As a practicing vegan, I'm compelled to point out that gelatin is absolutely not vegetarian-friendly. Thus, that one slimy shot concluded my experience with gelatinous intoxicants, and honestly, even if I wasn't morally opposed to Jell-O, I'd still rather lick cactus than slurp my booze like quivering bubble tea. Soon another round, or maybe 12, swept across our table. I now realized they were feeding me straight up, bottom of the lowest space, directly below the very bottom of the bottom shelf, tequila. Drinking tip number 4. Unless it involves chocolate, being kind to animals, or making the world a better place for everyone, all things, particularly tequila, in moderation. I headed to the bathroom and stood wedged in a filthy corner between a 60-something Courtney Love impersonator whose head kept rolling around like she was watching a circular tennis match and a younger lady who seemed genuinely angry that she had to pee, or whatever. As I waited my turn, I caught my reflection in the scratched and slightly warped mirror. The face looking back at me appeared to be a good 15 years older. Either the potency of recycled fermented agave juice had, over the course of 1 hour, literally sucked the youth from my face, or I was seeing the real, unadulterated me for the very first time. I'd never thrown up from drinking before, and, though the realization that I was a cronish barfly was provoking my gag reflex, I was determined not to do so now. Not there, at least. Not if it required my face to be within inches of the mysteriously discolored toilets of the Dragon's Lair. Nausea cured. Drinking tip number 5. Throwing up. Please refer to drinking tip number 4. I wandered back to our table, certain that the entire population of the bar was equally as disgusted by my appearance. I was now convinced I was a 20-something trapped inside my great Aunt Martha's arthritic body. Sorry, Aunt Martha. The tequila had shattered my carefully constructed mirage of youth. Drinking tip number 6. Water. Lots and lots of water. My fear was confirmed when some guy at the bar, who seemed sincerely proud to be missing a tooth, started winking at me, and I couldn't stop staring because he looked so much like whatever it is you picture when someone says the word inbred. This was not what I meant by having plans. Drinking tip number 7. If by plans you actually mean let's go to a dive bar and almost throw up in the crime scene they call a bathroom, that's fine. I guess. Just bring some hand sanitizer. In hindsight, I recognized that my young, naive idea of having a life was slightly skewed. I figured if I wasn't busy somewhere with a crowd of mostly drunk people, then I was probably missing out on something exciting. And if I had plans, then maybe I'd be exciting too. But most of the time, going out just left me craving the quick relief of death and nachos. Eventually, after hitting my almost mid-30s, my priorities changed, in part because recovering from a night of drinking now takes between 48 and 72 hours, and I don't have that kind of time. I came to the conclusion that having a life was more about finding purpose and peace than about finding a party. Though, truthfully, it was less an epiphany and more like a slow acknowledgement of the fact that I like sweatpants and Netflix more than anything else in the entire world. Also, I'm married. You throw in potato chips and Wi-Fi, and I may never leave the house again. Once a nerd hermit, always a nerd hermit. Of course, my experience is by no means a condemnation of having an active nightlife. Going out can be fun, so if you're planning to party on St. Patrick's Day, then, by all means, enjoy. And by enjoy, I mean please drink responsibly and do whatever it takes to avoid the toilets at the Dragon's Lair. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this story or my podcast, please share and let me know. You'll find me on Twitter at ChrisKKArya, Pinterest, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Remember, it's Chris with a K. I'm always looking for fun stories to narrate, so if you're an author or writer with a story which fits the Does This Happen to You theme, please contact me or comment on my Podbean page. And if you want to hear multiple stories like this multiple times per week, please become my podcast patron. Just click the link on my Podbean page.